Hi, and welcome to another episode of a documentary podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Catherine.
And we are two filmmakers who talk about documentary film stuff.
Yes, we do.
So, what are we talking about today?
So, today we're going to talk about the films of Brett Story, including The Hottest August and A Prison in 12 Landscapes.
And before we do that, do you have any film suggestions?
Yeah. Since one of Brett Story's films was made with the Field of Vision, I watched a couple of their short documentaries on their website. There's a good one about the taxi cabs and the recent suicides that have happened with the decline of their industry called Black and Yellow. And with that, I've listened to a podcast through the New York Times Daily also about that. And I think they work really well together because the film doesn't, I'd say, give the full story of the people. It's a good sort of intro into the subject. So like by watching that and then listening to the podcast, I think it opens up with like this huge issue that's happening in New York.
I'm going to suggest, and I have seen that taxi film, and also Field of Vision is really awesome. If you're a filmmaker out there, they have a lot of really cool resources right now, especially in these Corona times. I actually like got to do a little, video chat with some of their development people, because they were offering documentary filmmakers advice on getting their films off the ground, and I'm working on a documentary right now that we're trying to get funding for. So it was really cool that they were able to do that, and they were really cool people, and the films they release are awesome. We talked about one of them as well in our Oscars episode, because they had a film in there about the ship that sank in South Korea. So the film I'm going to suggest is one that I just watched that I thought was just really, really interesting. It's called Radio Unnameable, and I watched it on Canopy, and it's a pretty traditionally made documentary, but the subject matter was really interesting. It was about legendary radio personality Bob Fass and his like freeform radio in like especially the 60s and 70s. And he did it for like, you know, 50 years or something. Pretty crazy. Really interesting documentary, really interesting person, and you know, a lot of cool stories. You know, now that I'm working at the radio station, I've kind of dived into a lot of these like these documentaries about radio stations. And so that one was really good. And there's also another one called Sex and Broadcasting, which is about WFMU in New Jersey, which is a really interesting radio station, I think, as far as like independent radio goes. And the film is just really entertaining and good. So
I have one more recommendation. We've talked a lot about the Explained series on this podcast, and they have a new one out about coronavirus. Which I'd highly recommend about just getting some more information or like accurate information, because it's hard to know what's actually true and not right now with the news. And what I found really interesting about it is they had a previous episode about the next pandemic. So they use a lot of interviews from that previous episode and this episode to sort of talk about how like we knew something like this was coming and this is what was really going to kind of take over the world and have a huge shift. And that ended up happening, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, it's yeah.
A little too hitting close to home with some of those. But I do want to see that. I haven't watched it yet. I saw it pop up in my Netflix and was interested in checking it out, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy. Bill Gates is sitting there being in 2019 saying like the next thing that's going to affect the world and its economy will be a respiratory disease. Like, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill Gates. All right, let's dive into the educational section.
Yes. On today's episode, as we mentioned, we're delving into the career and films of Brett Story. Brett Story is a Canadian documentarian who holds a PhD in geography from the University of Toronto. She's also an assistant professor at Ryerson University and author whose work often takes an anthropological and geographical look at how systems and people navigate the world while coming up against structures of oppression. So I read this great article from the Creative Independent that has an interview with Brett, and she explains in her work that she is, quote, searching for the complex ways in which people inhabit the contradictions of actual existence. For example, how does the prison system affect not just people who are immediately imprisoned, but how is it integrated into the whole fabric of American life?
In her films, she utilizes interviews, which she finds as the most satisfying part of filmmaking, which I totally agree with. When it's done like she does, which is like an open-ended conversation, which, you know, allows people to freely express their experiences. There's another quote from the article that you wrote down. When you just care, when you remember why art is important, why you want to make it, what it has meant in your life, to connect to the part of you that encountered a poem or a song or a book for the first time and felt liberated by it, felt seen by it, felt the world opened up when you encountered it. So that is the crux of why do the work that we're doing. Brett has directed many doc features and shorts, but is probably best known for her films The Hottest August and A Prison in 12 Landscapes, which are the documentaries we will be talking about in this episode.
From all the hills came screams. A piece of sky beside the crescent sun was detaching. It was the monstrous swift shadow cone of the moon, hauling darkness like plague behind it.
Do you have any worries about the future?
Oh. What future?
I'm greatly concerned about the planet, which is falling apart.
Even before tragedy happened in my own life, I had made that choice to just be ready and prepared for things.
I grew up here, my mother grew up here. Nothing ever happened like this.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame.
No. No.
So first up, we're talking about The Hottest August, which is a film that I've been, you know, mentioning for a while now.
And I was finally able to see, because it's now available online.
Yeah, it is available for free on or if you have like cable or whatever through PBS, through Independent Lens. I think it actually might just be free in general.
It's free. I just watched it on their online website the other day.
And I did watch it as well, but it is like 34 minutes or something shorter than the actual full film. I think edited for broadcast. It's only an hour long, the PBS version. But if you pay like a movie ticket price through Grasshopper Films, they have the full hour and a half long film on there. But I've seen both now and they're both great. And I honestly felt like the hour one just felt, it felt like it captured a lot of the same like nuances, and it definitely let you feel, you know, the way the film feels and you get the point of it. But I do think that there is something lost a little bit, that when we get into 12 Landscapes, I think there's a little bit something lost from that, losing that half an hour. And it's just a matter of when we get to the prison film, we can kind of wrap it up. But anyway, so The Hottest August is from 2019. It's a documentary about the severity of climate change without ever mentioning it, spotlighting the ordinary lives of New Yorkers as they honestly share their growing fears about what the future holds while bracing for what could be one of the hottest months on record, and a month heavy with tension of a new president and political landscape. So,
yeah, I think the biggest takeaway I had from this film was that, yeah, it's about the environment, with maybe mentioning it like a couple times, or just very subtly, which I actually appreciated a lot, because a lot of environmental documentaries or climate change ones are just very straightforward or very, like, sensationalized, and it was nice to sort of get more of a human understanding to what's going on.
Yeah, and I also think there's something a lot more impactful when mm-hmm. you don't look at it directly, because there is a palpable, like, anxiety throughout the whole film. And it's not only, I mean, and climate change is, like, a lot of people are talking about the problems of climate change through, like, Hurricane Sandy or floods or, you know, crazy weather or how hot it is, or the changing landscape of, like, the animals and with the guy on the boat. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of talking about it without ever it. The only time it's ever, like, referred to directly is somebody being like, you know, I don't really think about climate change or anything.
Yeah.
And then they proceed to talk exactly about the things that climate change is affecting. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I think that that's really interesting. And I think it makes it more,
I think honest.
Yeah.
Or like relatable, because as much as I, like, care a lot about climate change, I, similarly to a lot of these people, don't think about it on a daily basis, because there are so many, like, anxieties or worries, especially now, that, like, I have about the future.
Yeah.
That aren't that.
And it is one of those things that it's like, this is, like, what I think about politics in general. Like, politics, climate change, all of these issues, they affect us directly, but it's not always very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the most honest way to talk about it, is, like, a lot of, like, Donald Trump might not immediately think that his presidency affected you, but now that we're in this coronavirus times, and, like, the fact that they can't even, like, pull it together on a pandemic and have anything resembling a cohesive response, and you realize how politics and these things can directly affect you. So when you have a conversation with someone in New York that might not be directly talking about climate change, but they're talking about Hurricane Sandy, or they're talking about, you know, seeing certain species of animals not being around anymore, or any number of things, you realize how much climate change is permeating our lives, mm-hmm. even if we're not directly talking about it. And you don't have to make an issue documentary that directly speaks to a problem in order to, and this is, like, same goes for Prison and 12 Landscapes.
Oh, completely. Yeah. They do the same thing.
Yeah.
They never once go inside a prison.
Yeah. And I think that that's amazing, in my opinion, because, I think it shows you how relatable it is in the human side of all of these things.
Mm-hmm. And I really like taking the climate change aside, how it really presented, like, an honest portrait of, like, what life in New York is like, mm-hmm. From all different backgrounds. And I think it wasn't just a climate film. It was also about, like, gentrification, race issues, class issues, and how I've always assumed, or it kind of made me question, like, my previous beliefs, how I assume, like, oh, if you don't believe in climate change, it's because you're not intelligent, or it's because you come from a certain political party, and it's not necessarily that. It's because it goes back into those, as I mentioned, like, those fears and anxieties that people have, that, like, that's not the first thing they think of, and you can't blame them for that. Like, they have some major things they need to be worrying about that are, like, affecting or directly affecting their lives.
I think that's an incredibly important point that you're making, because I think specifically, there's this thing that happened when Trump got elected, where a lot of, like, liberals that I know and stuff, like, and I mean, like, more of, like, the straight, like, Democrats, whereas, like, I'm further to the left probably. So when I say liberals, I mean it, like, probably more like centrists or whatever. Like Hillary Clinton, I guess, you know, coming out and saying that these people are, like, morons, or why are they voting against their best interests, and et cetera, et cetera. And I think this film perfectly encapsulates, like, the fact that when things are bad for you, and somebody like Obama didn't come through and, like, radically change things, it's going to be hard to like pull them back on your side when it seems like you've been abandoned by like the Democratic Party, where they're not supporting unions as strong as they used to. They're not supporting working class people as strong as they used to. And so when you're those working class people and you feel abandoned and you're poor or you're, you know, suffering and there's natural disasters and you don't feel in control of your life, you know, you're more susceptible to falling for somebody who comes up and like speaks for like radical change, even if it's misguided, like somebody like Trump, who is an asshole. And I don't think he's like, he means what he says, but he's speaking to their fears, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this film does well. And I think that's something we need to embrace as, you know, people who might have a better understanding of, see, that sounds condescending, but people that like talk and think about class and we sit around and pontificate about it and et cetera, like, how do we bring that into the real world? And how do we actually talk to people on their level and start humanizing them? Mm-hmm. And that's what this film does. It makes these people, regular people in New York, human beings. And you see that, like, you can love these people even if, like, maybe you don't agree with, like, their politics or the conclusions they've made. And they're not idiots. They're just...
their daily life is different than ours. Like,
yeah.
And I think one of the ways that she does such a good job of portraying that is through her interviews. It's a very, like, casual approach she has, and she includes herself often asking questions, and it's just the main question she asks throughout the film is, like, what is your biggest fear? What's your biggest anxiety of the future? And that's just such a humanizing question, a relatable question that pretty much everyone can answer. And she also interviews, I find, people in their, like, places they're comfortable, like their home, sitting in lawn chairs in the streets. And they are just so candid with her because I think they're not feeling like they're being interrogated or having to say something specific. They're just asked to talk about themselves and their lives. Because there's even a funny part in the bar when she is asking some people a similar question and they're like, oh, where are you from? And she goes, Canada. And they give her an eye roll. And instead of like getting very defensive or like walking away, she just keeps trying to have this conversation with them, and she gets a lot out of that by sort of not going too much on the defense and just trying to keep it as open as possible.
Yeah, those guys are like, that's one of my favorite interviews in the whole film, and those are guys that like generally I would be like, it's funny because I grew up with these type of people, and then now I'm at this place in my life where, you know, maybe not now, but I have been at this place in my life where I would have been closed off to even talking to them, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, it shows how we need to kind of have these dialogues and listen to people who are in different positions and stations in their life and understand the fear and the struggle there. And so I think this film is, I think it's really downplaying it to say it's just about climate change. Because it's about, I think it's just about politics in general,
yeah,
and how it affects our daily lives. And I think that she's really great at doing that in all her films, including one that we're not going to really dive into, but Camper Force.
Mm-hmm.
She does that exactly with like how capitalism is affecting older retirees.
And just completely taking advantage of them. Yeah,
through like Amazon and how Amazon is like completely like, you know, taking advantage of these people who are like retired and like, you know, it's really interesting. So Camper Force on Field of Vision is also really great. And I think we should just dive into Prison and 12 Landscapes because there's so many parallels to how,
yeah,
you know, this works.
Hello, Chandra. This is your mother. You know, I called to tell you that I love you. Keep your head up and keep your faith. Love is fine. Love you.
I don't think I've ever missed anything or anybody in my whole life. That is, I'm missing you right now. I'm just counting down the days, my love. Counting down the days. Oh, you know what? That's not what the season finale of our show. And the second season ain't even coming on until April of next year. That sucks.
A Prison in 12 Landscapes, which she released previously in 2016, is a film about the prison and its life in the American landscape, socially, economically, and psychologically. Vignettes ranging from female prisoners fighting wildfires to a Bronx warehouse that specializes in prison-approved care packages are seamlessly blended together to showcase communities and industries currently affected by America's system of mass incarceration.
So I just finished watching this film, and like, I've saw it before, but watching it a second time, it just really like... just hit me like how good it is.
What's interesting is I watched them back to back, and I actually preferred The Hottest August a lot more.
I agree in a sense, because I think The Hottest August does really interesting things with like the voiceover and like strange like shots, and it feels more dreamlike.
Mm-hmm. Yes, especially with the framing and this, like, sense of the August summer and how, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as, like, so many films about mass incarceration, like, the first one that comes to my head is, like, The 13th on Netflix. And so many of them, like, are so heavy-handed and speak so directly to it that it almost feels like... And this is the same with climate change and the same with, like, a lot of politics is, like, a lot of times when we just speak about it, it's hard to really get a feel for, it feels too big. It feels too like I can't do anything to change this. Like, this is horrible. And I think when you bring politics, and with this film specifically, when she brings it down to this level of how does it affect specific people in these different communities around America, like there's something like radically just effective about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like no one has really talked about this subject matter in a way that feels so human and feels so much like it feels so unfair.
Yeah, and it's interesting the different angle she takes to sort of look at this. Like, some are way more personal, and it makes you incredibly, like, sympathetic, and other ones you're just like, oh, people are profiting off this system. So it's, but it's from, like, a very small angle, not, like you're saying, like, this big, almost untouchable force. It's very, like, obvious with, not obvious, but... it's very direct in, like, the means of getting there.
So the... I kind of wrote down all the 12 different landscapes, too.
Yeah.
But it's really cool because it starts off with... one of the things I really like in a film is when you can loop back and you have that kind of, like, closed ending. Because it starts off with, like, phone calls and a bus and... you know, you're not really sure where you are. And then you kind of realize that maybe these phone calls are from, you know, prisoners or their families, like, to the prisoners, like, speaking, like, wanting them to be home, whatever. You kind of get that feeling, and it's pretty obvious, you know? And then, you know, it kind of goes through all the different landscapes. And then towards the end, you find out there's this, like, radio station where they play phone calls to prisoners. From their family members and stuff into the radio station that goes to the prison nearby up in Appalachia in I think it's in Kentucky. Yeah, it's like somewhere in Kentucky. And then, you know, the last shot is like you see this bus and it's like somebody going from New York to upstate, from New York City to upstate New York, probably to go visit a family member. Again, this is like a lot of stuff that isn't really laid out, but it's obvious what is happening, and I think it makes it more effective when you're trying to do the work of what are they trying to say? Like, especially like the Quicken Loans part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's so funny because the whole film has a pretty specific look. It's a lot of static shots. It's a lot of, you know, the interviews are kind of wide on sticks, and there's not a lot of camera movement or anything. And then they go to this Quick and Loans place, and you have this tour guide, and he's like making the camera like, come over here, shoot, you know. Yeah. And they keep picking, you can tell they're picking it up on tripod and like walking the camera over and trying to set it up. And then he moves on to another spot. And anyway, if you know the history of Quicken Loans, they've been accused of predatory lending, of profiting off of giving, you know, high interest loans to poor people. They make so much money. They're taking over so much of downtown Detroit and like a gnarly amount of gentrification. And then he even like kind of hangs himself a little bit talking about, we work with the cops and they come down here and they put on plain clothes and, you know, we pay them to come out and like,
yeah,
police, like, not looking, they're undercover, and like it's pretty pernicious, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way to like show the stark difference between the classes, I think.
Yeah, the landscape or like little segment that most got me, I think was actually surprisingly one of the most direct ones, the one about the lady in the trash can.
Oh yeah, I got so pissed off.
Just a little backstory on it. A lady gets arrested because her trash can wasn't covered properly, and ends up going to jail or her ticket meant she'd have to go to jail for 15 days.
Or pay $175. But she said, I should not have to pay $170 for this. I'll just go to jail.
And it was like probably one of the most like blatant like views or blatant acts of racism like I think I'd seen in a film. Yeah. That's because it's something so small that you're like, how can someone actually get away with, or how can a police officer actually get away with this?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
she never even got the ticket.
No,
like the cop said that he dropped it off at 7 a.m but the ticket said it was 9 p.m and then she was like, I never even got a ticket. Why is there a bench warrant for $175 mm-hmm. fine because I never even got the ticket? And then, then she was like, I'm not going to pay this $175. But then she decided to go to jail. I think she spent like 3 days there. They told her she had to be there for 15 days. But she said there was like blood on the walls. There was like all this stuff. And you can just tell how much it affected her.
It like broke her down.
And it's so frustrating that we allow our justice system to justice, quote unquote, system to be like this and to be so blatantly profiteering. At the end, there's these two women talking about how they're just like two women on the streets talking about trying to go visit.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? I think she said she was trying to go see one of her loved ones, and they were just talking about how much the cops charge for phone calls and how much they charge for this and how, you know, and that all that money goes back into the prison system. And it's pretty insane. I don't even know. This whole film.
I found the profiting probably like the biggest thread that was just the most infuriating. Like the city of 50,000 people that makes $2 million off of like parking tickets or like ridiculous tickets, like that's insane.
Yeah, so
would say, like, when you would drive from county to county, if you were African-American driving into a more prominent or like white area, they would pull you over and be like, what are you doing here, and find some way to fine you.
Mm-hmm. And there was literally, I think it was near Ferguson, it was somewhere in St. Louis County, they were at this place, and it was every single person they interviewed was there for like a ridiculous reason.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, are you kidding me? And they're just like, I don't know what to do. You know, we have to come here and pay this ticket, and I don't even know why I got it. And
well, they even say, like, one of the interviewees, they say, like, look around, everyone here looks like us.
Yeah.
You know, they're targeting a certain demographic. And it's like, if you're just lower income and you get a $300 ticket and you can't pay it, you end up in prison. Like, it's just...
Yeah, and then this, like, one, like, rich-looking white dude comes out, and he's like, oh, I'm a public, I forgot what he said. He's a public something. Defender?
Attorney. I think attorney, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I'm a public attorney, and he's like, this is not one of the abusive courts. you know, and you're like looking around and you're like,
well, he's the one who says they made several million dollars, and you're like, do you realize like how like ironic you're being right now?
That's the thing, is like these people, they try to like tout how ethical they are, and they're saying these like really horrible things, just like the Quicken Loans guy.
Mm-hmm. And then you literally like look behind them on the screen and it's saying a completely different story.
Yeah,
like you see that line of people behind them and you're like, that's not what you're saying.
Yeah, but honestly, like, not even comparing the two, I think the styles are pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the thing that might be missing from the Hottest August, is like with that extra half an hour, it does do more, you know, looping back.
Okay.
And it goes a little bit further. But even just that hour-long version you can watch for free right now is so good. And I think it's just like, I love the way she interviews people because it's so open-ended. Because I think so many documentarians, are professional interviewers, you know. And I feel like Brett Story might actually just be a filmmaker first.
Yeah.
Because her films feel like films that get to really important human issues.
Like, she gets to the story, like, that the person wants to tell themselves, in a way. Like, instead of, like, changing what someone's saying to fit her story, she shapes her stories around what people are saying. Because that, ultimately, is the real truth. Not necessarily what you set out to make.
One of my favorite moments in A Prison in 12 Landscapes is they are randomly interviewing this guy on the street, and then he's like, oh, what's this, like, are you guys with the news or something? And they're like, no, we're actually making a film. He's like, oh, like a documentary? And they're like,
he asks if she's a student,
and they're like, are you like a student or something? And she's like, yeah, sure. And then she's like, what do you do? And he's like, and he doesn't like say anything. He's like, I just live, try to be peaceful. I just love that little moment, because, and there's like that couple in the Hottest August too that she interviews, that are just sitting there in their plastic chairs outside mm-hmm. of their garage. I just love the way, even though I totally disagree with them on a lot of things, I just love the way they just like talk, you know, they're just people.
And she allows them to have like conversations with each other, which is really, I think, you get the most elements out of that, because it's like the wife starts teasing her husband and is like, well, you just worry about the future and all I care about is the present. And it's a very like relatable or like real conversation.
Yeah. I just love both of these films. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just say everybody should watch these both immediately.
Yes.
I think that there should be, I think that we should learn something from the way she makes films. And
yeah, I think it's just to like approach anything in general with like an open mind and sort of compassion, and realize like we're all human, we all have fears, and don't judge others based off of that.
Yeah, and I think that the biggest thing I get is, as a person who does make more political work, that it shouldn't be about imposing my own politics. Mm-hmm. It should be about examining my politics and with conversations with others, because there's definitely a 100% chance I'm wrong about a lot of things. And I will never learn that if I don't actually listen to other people and how, you know, the society we live in is affecting their lives. And if we can have those conversations about how we're both affected, then maybe we can actually like have some kind of dialogue and realize that we have a lot. And I don't mean this in the, you know, we need unity and, you know, whatever, you know, I'm not saying that, like, let's just blindly, like, you know, agree on everything and be, you know, and ignore all of our problems. I'm saying like, let's face them directly. Let's have hard conversations. And I think that that's what these films do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just out here being like, I'm going to preach to the choir, you know?
But what's interesting is like, she doesn't make them seem like they're hard conversations. Which, I don't know, she's got an incredible skill with that, where it's like going up to someone and talking about these issues, it just seems so natural.
Yeah. I think part of that is just being open to listening a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And especially as filmmakers, like, we have to listen, you know? And I think that's how you make a great film. And it's very, like, Maisel Brothers, you know? Like, cinema verite, but like in the best way possible, because, you know, every now and then you would hear one of the Maisel brothers and you would hear them talking or whatever, every now and then, or, you know, the subject would like interact with them in some way. And I think that's okay. Like, let's leave that in, because that tells you something.
Yeah, I actually wrote down in my notes, like, verite with dialogue. Like, because it feels like it's a part of the surroundings or the sort of the landscape that everybody's in. But I was, in one of the articles I was reading about her, they said she's kind of like the opposite of, like, an Errol Morris interview.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about, like, his films and his sort of interview style, like, he gets a very different feeling out of his films by how he interviews people, even though they're often on the same subjects that she does.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize, like, I much prefer this style to the other.
I think so, too.
Even though they each have their own place.
Of course. And I think it's different if you're interviewing random people on the street and you're interviewing someone who was in a position of power, like, who Errol Morris, like, often interviews. Like, Errol Morris is at his best when he's, like, interviewing somebody like Donald Rumsfeld,
mm-hmm.
or interviewing someone like I'll leave it at that, but someone who's in a place of power who kind of needs to be checked, and then you can go in and you can interrogate somebody because they are responsible for the death of thousands of people. They were in a huge position of power. They started wars. That's very different than talking to someone.
Yeah. And they've been media trained.
Yeah. That's very different than sitting out and just trying to talk to regular working people about how their lives are being affected by whatever.
So if you think of, like, Vernon, Florida, it has a very different feel. Like, it almost sort of feels like it's not mocking, but it's like the absurdities of these people's lives, where this one is like, oh no, this is just, these are people's normal lives, and it's, they're allowed to sort of live this way.
Yeah, and I think
when it comes to the prison or the power of the prison system, but like the people who are being affected by it.
Yeah, like maybe the filmmakers behind Tiger King should have watched a couple Brett Story films first.
Yes.
Because that film has a lot of judgment in it, and I think what I love about Brett Story, Frederick Weissman, the Maisel brothers, so many filmmakers, is they go in and listen and learn. And they don't judge, you know, and they can create these beautiful stories that show a place, a time, and humanity in a way that is feels caring.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, as you describe it, it's like they're basically acting like anthropologists just as much as they are filmmakers.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to the last episode we did with sensory ethnography, mm-hmm. too. I don't think that this is that far off of that.
No, not at all.
Because you really get a sense of New York in the summer. It's hot. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of different people living in this one little place. And the Prison 12 landscape is about place. All right, so that does it for another episode of the Documentary Podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Check us out on Instagram at A Documentary Podcast.
And our website, adocumentarypodcast.com.
You can follow me on Instagram at Joshua LeBure.
And myself at CMS Moments. And please let us know if you have any suggestions for films for us to watch. You can email us at adocumentarypodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in a couple weeks. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I forgot to add this in the script.
Yeah. And so next week we'll be talking about Anthropocene and Watermark. So feel free to check those out so you can know what we're talking about.
All right. We'll see you in a couple weeks when we talk about Anthropocene and Watermark.
Thanks.
Thank you. Sweet.